I'm utterly unprepared.
Did you just say you're unprepared for this?
Yeah. And I mean, I know that I say that all the time, but this time really feels accurate. And it was my idea, I suppose. So, I mean,
that's true.
Gotta stick to your commitments, I suppose, right?
Oh, man. Doesn't that feel organic, that banter? So much better than the contrived...
Primo grade A quality
contrived
banter.
Garbage that you've had to put up with.
I mean, it's been hit or miss. Let's just say that. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it's like, okay, well, I guess we're going to roll with that then.
Welcome to the Voyage Podcast, a show that traverses the oceans of myth and legend through the lens of Catholic theology and philosophy. Come aboard as we set sail in pursuit of the heroic life and Christian virtue with your hosts, Mike Schramm and Jacob Platty.
You know, I was just thinking, you complained at the beginning when we first started recording about how we were recording so late. So now we record relatively early, not super early. It's not like, it's not five in the morning.
But it's,
and now it's like, oh, I'm so unprepared. I'm so not ready for this. So it's like, when would be the best time for you, Jacob? is there at least a pocket at some point in the day where you can get some of your good work in?
You know, good work. Whoever said I did good work?
Well,
I never made
relatively
that promise,
best
Mike.
Work. Your relatively best work. I should have rephrased. Okay.
Do I want to be here right now at 8:30 in the morning doing this podcast?
Oh wow, another good selling point.
But did I show up? I sure did.
Your obedience is more valuable than your what? Emotional investment? Is that what you're trying to convince me of? It's what I'm not convinced.
I do like that this is, I feel like this is more of a morning show because we're both like sipping coffee.
Well,
though,
that's, yeah.
Which is kind of nice. I feel like I'm on like Good Morning America or something like
we
that.
We are. We're not like, Good Morning like, America. We're not there yet.
I'll try not to. What mug are you using, though?
Oh.
See, I'm using a C-3PO Funko Pop mug.
Mine is the Try and Abed in the Morning from the TV show Community, the Dan Harmon created TV show Community.
Wow. Dude, we got our pop culture bona fides going this morning.
Yeah. I didn't use my St. Thomas Aquinas one that I normally do because, I don't know, just been feeling this one lately. Not even for a bit.
Well, you know, see, you would have come across as so much more pious than me because I would have been like, look at my C-3PO mug. And you would have been like, look at my St. Thomas Aquinas mug.
Yeah.
And then I would have had to have given it to you as the truly more charitable Christian. But in the old school sense, folks, I understand he's not giving money to poor people or something like that by drinking out of that mug. But he's showing the love of Christ by demonstrating his love for his Christian, you know, saintly community.
Is that enough BS? Yep. Banter? Is that enough banter? Are we ready to? So, in one sense, you should be very primed for this because this is sort of a part two. I mean, it's kind of its own devoted, its own episode. So what I was thinking is we want to release this like right before season two drops. So we've both watched season one of Loki, and it was announced recently, well, now probably a couple of weeks ago, that season two is going to be released October 6th. And so I thought in sort of anticipation, kind of like what we did for The Mandalorian, where we did like one episode we released before season, three? And then it was an anticipation. Then we said we're going to return back to it at the end of season three. I thought we could kind of do the same thing with Loki. So like this will be our season one, not just recap, but like main themes to like prepare for season two. And then after season two is over, after the last episode, we can kind of do a debrief or a recap. How does that sound?
That sounds great,
because it's happening
as usual.
Anyway, so.
You are captaining this ship, yeah. Captaining this ship with a plump.
Well, yeah, it was more of a rhetorical question, but yeah. I want to continue the illusion that this is a dialogue and not just a monologue. So, if you can try back, it hasn't been as long for you because you didn't watch it season one right when it came out. You only watched it what, like 2 months ago, 3 months ago was your first time going through season one of Loki.
Yeah, 3 months sounds about right.
Probably when we first started talking about recording it. I was really
impressed by it.
So.
Yeah, well, that would make sense. You know, so we, depending upon when this episode airs, right, you know, we don't always show these episodes in order or whatever. This does feel like, when you were saying me being primed, I thought you were going to refer to the fact that we've recently also talked about things like prophecy and time travel.
I was, and then I got sidetracked. So that's why, yeah. No, I was going to say that, and then I got kind of, I was a squirrel that saw a nut and I, you know, ran off, so.
I see, yeah. Saw a Thomas Aquinas mug somewhere. This is less a sequel to those episodes, but it's very thematic and it's almost like a spinoff.
Oh.
Yeah? That's what I'm gonna go with on this one, like a spinoff. I'm also going to call this a kind of crossover episode. This is Voyage Podcast's first crossover. Where we're going to get the trickster episodes.
Yeah, that's true.
And we're going to get the time episodes, and then we're going to converge them into an epic.
And whenever you talk about time, because we've kind of done a little bit about predestination and eucatastrophe, and so you're inevitably going to kind of bring some of those elements in. And I was noticing that. So I was telling you before we were recording that I rewatched the season finale, because I had actually watched season one like... probably, I mean, I don't know how long, many years ago season one came out, but it was relatively soon after season one came out. And you know, he has that long conversation with, and I feel like at this point it's not a spoiler because Kang or He Who Remains has been in other MCU, you know, features. That was actually my plan last night, was I was going to rewatch the season finale of one and watch Quantumania just to kind of see, like, you know, how prepared, but I, you know, best laid plans and all that stuff.
Is Quantumania, is that out on Disney Plus
now?
It
is, yeah.
Quantumania. Yep. I need to re-up my subscription. I've let it lapse and now I need to get back to it.
Well, and even if you just waited until when season two comes out in October, then you could just watch Quantumania and then season two, like, you know.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense.
But however you want to do it, it's your
unfortunately,
money.
Unfortunately, so.
Or maybe you're using somebody else's. Yeah, I don't want to.
We're not going.
Yeah, I don't want you to incriminate.
We're not going to specify. Yeah,
it's somebody's money. It's somebody's money.
Somebody's paying for it. But unfortunately, due to like circumstances in real life that are unpalatable, the person who was playing Kang is no longer like as involved in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Well, we've talked about, well, you know, it kind of, I mean, this isn't going to be, yeah, like you said, the main thrust of the conversation, but it should remind you of the scapegoat episode too, which, I mean, for better or worse.
No, now, it does. It does. Yeah,
very, it's very clear distinction I do want to make right up front is when Rene Girard was talking about the scapegoat, is that victim was innocent. And like, it's become, you know, relatively clear, or at least somewhat clear.
Well, technically, just for the record, just because my wife watches a lot of court TV, and so it's incumbent upon me to put this out there. He is innocent until proven guilty, folks. Uh-huh. I don't know. What bugs me the most is that instead of recasting, I mean, this is going to sound really petty, but instead of recasting the character, they're just going to change the trajectory of the entire like story arc that they're intending to do. At least those are the rumblings that I've heard, right? It's kind of like when Chadwick Boseman unfortunately passed away, and they, instead of recasting Black Panther, they baked into the movie universe that T'Challa died off screen. That's an absurd decision, Marvel. I mean, we've lived in a world in which characters get played by different people. You've done it already. Edward Norton started as Bruce Banner, and he was replaced with Mark Ruffalo.
War Machine,
it's
too.
It's okay.
War Machine.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, I don't know why you have to upend your entire, like, just that we're talking about, you know, He Who Remains and Kang the Conqueror and things like that. And
it was an ironic name. That's
the reason why I bring all of it up is because he seemed like a pretty cool villain, and it sounds like he's not going to be much of a villain moving forward, even though he was going to be the new Thanos.
Yeah.
He was going to be the new, like, big bad of the next, like, arc or two of the Marvel Universe. And now he's kind of a throwaway character, I guess. which I don't know, that bugs me. But after maybe I should have brought this all up at the end of the episode after we talked about he remains and all that.
Sorry, but, you can cut all this out. You're the one who's going to edit this. So, circling back a little bit because this is going to be about Loki. And at the end of Loki season one, we do meet Kang the Conqueror, or who he's referred to as He Who Remains at the end of season one. And he has this long conversation but why it's significant and why it is kind of a spinoff to our episode on prophecy and about time, which we had just kind of finished talking about, is because that's the main thrust of season one of Loki is the idea of timelines, the idea of multiverses, the idea of like, what is it called? The TVA, Time Variance Agency, I think is what it stands for, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you have time as the biggest, in a sense, the overarching character, which kind of speaks to what we were talking about in our previous episode on time of Kronos versus Kairos. Because Kronos was that titan in Greek mythology that was sort of like the overarching, like the titans were the more fundamental realities, even more so than the gods. And it was always the struggle between the titans and the gods, especially Kronos and his children. And that's why we have the famous story and the famous example of Kronos eating his children is that's the struggle between the old and the new, right? The old guard and the new guard. It's the struggle with that we all have with time.
Well, and time eats everything.
Yeah,
right?
and time destroys everything.
And in the Loki series,
the Hobbit
right?
riddle.
So let's.
That was an example we didn't talk about. The Hobbit. What
another
is,
example it, of Lord of the Rings yeah, being all the way down?
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Very good. Let's just give a brief overview of the Loki TV show. All right. Loki is obviously the god of mischief. In the Marvel Cinematic Universe, he is superhero/supervillain because he kind of waffles back and forth. He definitely evolves across the storyline.
He has the big redemption arc. He and Tony Stark.
He has kind of something of a redemption arc.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, he's still he's always mischievous.
Like, yeah.
One of the things that's so good about this TV show and about is the character himself. Tom Hiddleston's character, Loki, is one of the best just cinematic characters that has come out in a long time. He's endlessly watchable as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Very charismatic, interesting villain and hero, regardless of what he's doing. And that character he's kind of like the new Han
it's
Solo.
It's why Marvel kept him
at
around.
At least Han Solo.
After the Avengers is because of
that. Was he supposed to be something of because Tom Hiddleston just like knocked it out of the park kind of thing? I wouldn't be surprised
The Han Solo. That makes sense. Go ahead with
No, he is. He's kind of like, you know, because like when you're first introduced to Han Solo in episode 4 back in 1977, like he is a rogue, right? He's meant to be a rogue. And his character gets kind of softened. Hey, there's only 3 movies, right? And so everything feels accelerated in a 3-movie arc as opposed to the kind of like opportunity that Tom Hiddleston had across like 12 movies or whatever. But nevertheless, people kind of underestimate just how much of a kind of scoundrel Han Solo was meant to be. Mm. I think we kind of forget that he is something of a scoundrel. And Tom Hiddleston,
I think the phrase you're looking for is scruffy looking nerf herder is the that's the translation. But
yeah, exactly.
But anyway, Tom Hiddleston, Loki.
Well,
Tom
no,
Hiddleston's
so
Loki.
His character is awesome. At the end of the first Avengers movie, when he's captured, this Loki TV show posits that there's a screw up because of the events of the second Infinity War. What's it called?
Oh, Endgame.
The very end of the first Endgame. Yeah, there you go.
Because they go back
when they're
in
doing
time
travel shenanigans. Yep. Yeah, we never even brought that up in our time episode stuff, but they're doing time travel shenanigans in Endgame, and one of those things kind of creates this reality where Loki actually gets his hands on the Cosmic Cube, the first of the Infinity Stones, and disappears with it, right? But it's quickly revealed that he's created an alternate timeline by doing that.
Yeah.
In other words, all the timeline that has occurred in all the cinematic movies that have played in theaters is its own timeline, and the entire Loki TV show is going to take place in this offshoot timeline, and there is this really, really bureaucratic agency that is responsible for maintaining the timeline and kind of pruning off any timelines that emerge off of it.
And that
it,
is right? the word they use.
Maintaining one consistent timeline. Yeah, like a tree. Like you're pruning off the branches kind of thing. Mm. And the rest of the show is about him fighting against the reality that, just to get right into the themes of the show, fighting against the reality that there is like this agency outside of time itself that has ultimate control over the actions of everybody yeah. and kind of the ultimate power. And you know, they have like Infinity Stones as paperweights on all of their desks. Yeah. You know, they just have like drawers full of them and things and like that. It's like everything that is just so important and all the stakes, all of the loss and the triumph and everything that takes place within the core continuity of the Marvel Cinematic Universe is played like a joke.
Well, that's just it.
In the Loki TV show.
The whole multiverse idea, it just trivializes your experience. It trivializes us. And that's what, when people get so obsessed with the multiverse, that's what they kind of have to grapple with, is this idea that, well, it's either convenient for me to live as if nothing matters, as if, like you said, the stuff that we made such a big deal about, like the Infinity Stones, oh yeah, those are just tossed aside, you know? And that's...
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It kind of reminds me, did you ever watch the... So I'll tie this bow up quickly, but did you ever watch the first Men in Black movie?
Unlike me, I mean, frankly, you might as well run with it, man. I know I do.
Did you ever watch the first Men in Black movie? Or do you remember that one?
Yeah,
do you remember
for
the
sure.
post-credit yeah. uh-huh. scene where? Because remember, the whole idea was that one animal had like the galaxy chain.
Have we not brought this up in conversation
we
before?
Because
I feel like I was just talking about this with somebody.
But it's the same idea, right? Because it's the whole there's this entire galaxy was in this little like it looked like it was on a collar, right? And so the idea in Men in Black is that it zooms out, and that we're just an entire galaxy inside this marble that an alien is playing marbles with.
That's being played marbles
and,
with, yeah, with a little child.
So, alien. Like, it trivializes existence. It trivializes, and that's what Loki kind of has to grapple with is now he has this realization, because he was a god, or he is a god, right, in our universe, so to speak. And... Everything was just trivialized to him, you know, according to this TVA, according to this time agency. And it's in the whole season becomes this search for like going, it's the last hurdle, right? It's all the way down is what they're kind of searching for. He and this other variant Loki, Sylvia. And that's where they finally get to.
Are searching for
kind of like that.
The last hurdle. Just be a little
kind of like
more specific.
The
what
foundation
do you mean by that?
Of all of these things. Because remember, they try to dig deeper and deeper into.
Well, because
time
ultimately,
and
ultimately, they're looking for agency, yeah. right? Like
it's
ultimately,
the classic
like so,
fate versus
it's,
free will.
It's this existentialist. It's this existentialist kind of like, no, I demand my agency yeah. back. I demand my purpose back. I demand
it's the Invictus poem
for my choices.
As a TV show. It's basically, it's the...
Well, and that's... Yeah. Well, and it's also... And there's a little bit of revenge, because there is two Lokis, and let's get back to that, because revenge plays into it, too. And it's a very, like, existentialist show, yeah. isn't it? Yeah. But,
for better or worse.
You know, he has this kind of Neo... moment where, you know, back in the Matrix when Morpheus is like, you know, what's the question that Morpheus even asks? He's like, Morpheus asks, what do you think you're in a simulation or something like that? Or have you ever, or do you believe in fate? No, that's what it was. He simply asked him, do you believe in fate? And Neo's response was, no, I prefer to feel like I'm in control of my life.
Okay.
Right. And so Loki is a show that says, no, you are fated. Everything is fated. You are controlled. And Loki's entire purpose is to gain back control of his life. In that pursuit, he runs into a female iteration of Loki from the multiverse that is basically out for revenge because part of the pruning process, this is all just like spoilers, folks, like just full on spoilers for Loki. Pruning process basically means the annihilation of
a timeline now. So now we're not just talking of a world or of a planet.
Right.
We're talking of, everything that took place that branched off of that timeline. So it's like, it's like kind of like when people made such a big deal about what Thanos did. It's like doubling, because he only wiped out half of a population.
Well, it's more like infinite, like multiplying it by like infinity kind of thing. I mean, presumably time goes on forever, and the idea is that this agency will always just be
or
pruning
does it go on forever?
Entire realities. Or
well, because what do Loki and his variant Sylvia find, or where do they get to? They get to the quote-unquote end of time in the season finale.
Do.
So, I mean, I know what you were saying by it. I was just trying to be cute. But but no, what you are, I mean...
Which, the end of time itself is a fascinating concept in the context of this TV show. But what were you going to go with?
And like we were saying, is it's sort of like what Thanos did times infinity, because if the whole idea is that this timeline can branch off to another one, but then within that one can branch off to another one and another one, then you have this, you know, again, it, that's why the whole like in concept of infinity, it, people are trying to like, materialize it. Like, you know what I mean? Because if you have this material, like this scientific materialism mindset, then everything has to be stuff, but you can't do that with time, or you can't do that with infinity. You can't turn it into stuff. And that's the problem with, you know, almost like the foundational problem with so many of these, when shows try to do this, is they try to take this abstract thing and turn it into stuff, whether it's time, whether it's infinity itself. And in one sense, you'd be like, oh, well, that's what makes it, you know, more real for us. And our question is always, why is that what it takes to make it more real? Why isn't it real in the first place? You know?
That was pretty deep, bro.
I mean,
well, no, I'm just so, not knocking it at all. I'm just saying, like
no
mic drop, I guess. Let's hear. Getting back to the Loki thing. One of the things that I thought was interesting, this is a total aside, but it's been in my head since being in the conversation, so I'm just going to arbitrarily insert it in the conversation at this point. There's all kinds of heaven and hell motifs that go on in this Loki TV show. In some sense, it's kind of like if you took Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey and put them into like the themes of both into the same media entertainment, you kind of get Loki.
Okay.
Only whatever. But
less air guitar. We'll
do an episode.
Less air guitar.
A little bit less, yeah. Because like, so for example, one of the things I'm getting at here is when Loki is being punished, like, so they're trying to extract information from Loki because they want to identify, you have this rogue, I guess, just to give more context, the alternate Loki, the female Loki, is going around killing agents, killing TVA agents and things like that. And so they have this kind of rogue metahuman and they're trying to capture her. And so they think Loki has knowledge of her, knows how to find her and things like that. And one of the things they do to try to coerce him is put him into basically his own version of hell. And so they put him into this courtyard space, and it literally looks like something you'd see out of Bogus Journey or any other myriad examples of like how hell gets depicted in pop culture, where Loki has to re-experience like his worst.
Save that for our hell episode, because we got to do a hell episode
again.
Too. Not underworld like we've already done, but an actual like hell episode.
Mm-hmm. Something specific. Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll definitely have a callback to this because it was such a, it's really such a poignant kind of example of it. You know, not particularly original because we've seen this before going back to Sisyphus, right? Rolling the boulder up the hill and then having to go do it again all over again. Or Prometheus having the eagle re-eat his liver every day kind of thing. This kind of repetition of the same thing over and over again is literally hellacious in a lot of ways to us. In this particular example, he is being physically and verbally abused by Sif over his betrayal of Thor, his betrayal of Valhalla. I forget exactly what she's berating him over, but it's something that it's poignant to Loki, like, because what people listening to this who haven't watched the show have to understand is this is not Loki that's had a long redemption arc across 12
different
MCU.
This is the one that
would
have just
MCU
been captured
movies.
By...
This is... He's still full villain at the beginning of Loki, the TV show. He's still just the jerk who, you
tried
know...
to destroy New York.
Attacked innocent New York City, you know, all for the sake of like being, you know, a god to these people. He's a total egomaniac at the beginning of this. And so this is kind of a redemption arc for this version of Loki within the context of a single season. And they do a great job. But one of the things that helps, that's part of that redemption arc, which again, this goes to the, it's almost purgatorial in that regard. Less an example of hell and more an example of like some kind of purgation or purgatory, where he, and we don't find out how long he's been there. We get the impression that they put him there for a while at any rate.
Well, that's the whole where point he's just of the sitting show there, too, is that according to the, when you're in this world, time, you know, it, like, this is actually going from Kronos to Kairos, right? This is the fairy world.
Yeah. You're outside of time.
You're in fairy world, you know, to use that analogy from our, when we were talking about time before. But so, yeah, time doesn't move the same way because he stepped out of the timeline, whatever timeline that is. But sorry, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, there's an interesting, you know, the end of the first Doctor Strange movie has a similar kind of purgatorial note.
Oh, sure.
Because, you know, spoiler alerts for that movie, but he has to go through basically an infinite number of horrific deaths at the end of the end of that movie to get what he wants, you know, to save the
day.
It's
a dying to self, right? It's a Christian walk. That's the spin.
Yeah, one of these, like, if we've never done just like a straight up Doctor Strange episode, which I know we haven't, but sometimes I have to remember what episodes we have or have not done because we've done enough now that they're starting to like blur together in
my head. If only there was some sort of like master document that had all of the episodes listed according
to... Wouldn't that be nice? I would love that. That would just be really convenient.
If only there was somebody who was putting that sort of thing together for the sake of his intrepid co-host.
It would make sense. It would. You should get on that. Mike. Anyone really, come on now, we're slacking. But in the context of the Loki show, it's a pretty meaningful moment because you really get to see it kind of works, right? So you heard it here first, kids. Torture works. No, I'm just kidding. He starts off trying to be all braggadocious, trying to like confront, being confronted with his villainy. And eventually he's just so belittled, right? In like the truest sense of like what that
phrase
means,
right? Like humble, like humiliated, exactly. Like humility.
Yeah. Because when he's constantly faced with it, when he's constantly given over to it, like, and it doesn't hurt that, he's actually getting like kind of like slapped every time too, you know. Eventually, you know, he's just got his hands up. He's like, just no more, please, 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 I'm sorry, kind of thing. But it's that level, it's that kind of like layer of materiality to the punishment, if you will, that kind of cracks the shell that allows for like the actual humility and the emotion to come out too, kind of thing, right? And he basically, by the end of that, is like, you know, that's probably like the point where he really starts to turn a corner, right? That and his relationship with the other Loki. But it's just an interesting example of purgatory or hell kind of in the context of this time thing, which it, in some sense, the idea of purgatory and hell really lends itself to understanding Kairos.
Yeah.
Understanding like reality outside of time, right?
Well, this actually...
A lot of our caricatures...
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Well, in fact, I don't want to keep going too more because we'll just have a whole episode.
Well, no, and really quickly, just to touch on that, actually, because one of the things that I always have to emphasize with my own students when we do go over purgatory or purgatory inevitably comes up, because it is one of those questions that, you know, whether you're coming from a... like a Protestant mindset or even just any sort of non-Catholic or non-classical Christian mindset. Because, and I know we're not going to make this a huge thing, but even though there may be different words used, like the Orthodox have, by all means, the exact same concept of what the Catholic Church calls purgatory.
We have a concept,
But one of the big...
It's a little bit different, but we have something there.
people will always bring up the question of time, because the language that, whether it was sloppy language that was used or we just misinterpret the language that's used, but people will associate Chronos time to purgatory. Like, oh, this person was in purgatory for X many days or X amount of time. And what I always try to emphasize is, what does, like, how do we measure time now when we're in the body, right? We use physical, physical space. But if your soul leaves your body, you're not measuring time by physical space anymore. You're not in physical space in the same way that you are in your body. And so when we talk about time and purgatory, you can't think of it the same way. You can't think of it as the earth going around the sun anymore, right? Time means something different. You're going out of Chronos and going into Kairos. And when I say to them, like, well, you know, when you are struggling with like a math concept, let's say, in one sense, you get it in an instant, but it's only because of all of that previous, you know, mental energy or time that you've spent working at it that led to that one point where the light switched on. And so in one sense, it was an instantaneous thing. In another sense, it was a long process. Well, it's the same thing when it comes to our purification, right? When you're purified, not just of sin, but of attachment to sin, in one sense, it's an instant. But in another sense, it's because of that long process beforehand. And that's kind of the purification and purgatory is it's instantaneous, right? Whatever an instant means.
That's an interesting way to
put
it.
But it's also because of, right, the energy or the work or the grace that has been given to you, presumably over the course of your whole life, right? God willing, or the grace that you've been cooperating with over the course of your whole life, you know?
Yeah. Well, and you know, and a lot of this is, I feel like it should be noted, it's all kind of hypothetical in the sense that, like, we're kind of playing with information that's been given to us from, like, the saints and from the theologians and things like that. I don't want to say that I have the be-all, end-all answer to, like, how this purgation element works when we die, right? I think what Mike was just saying seems sensible.
Well, it's extrapolating
like
what we experience
works,
in this
works
life
pretty well with,
onto the next. It's just an extrapolation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you. I just, you know, people should always take what we say, you know, go talk to your priest, right? Go, you know, because we will just kind of talk about these kind of concepts that are kind of big, right? And kind of mysterious and things like that. When St. Peter says, with the Lord, a day is as 1,000 years and 1,000 years is as a day. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Does he not do both? Or is it just 1,000 years is like a day?
I mean,
you remember?
You know, maybe my mind just creates the parallel, but I'm pretty sure it's both.
Right. Yeah, that's why I'm afraid, like, my mind just made the parallel. I hope this is true.
Well,
go read First Peter, or is it Second Peter? Man, I need to read my Bible more. It's in the Peters.
Our Pope said it. Oh, sorry. You don't want to.
Yeah. You can call him Pope.
Yeah.
There's Popes. We have Popes too.
Our Pope infallibly defined it.
Yeah.
Well, it's in the Bible, right?
Well, it's in the Bible. So we'll let you have that one too.
See, Popes can infallibly define stuff. There's already precedent. That's what I'm hearing you say.
Dang. Case closed.
Sorry, keep going.
So.
It is both, by the way. It's 2 Peter, chapter 3, verses 8 and 9, and it is both. So now you can, I know it's been bothering you.
I'm really glad it's very both, because, no, it's really because I was about to lay down some profound pearls here, and it's incumbent.
And you were worried that it was on a foundation of sand.
Yeah, either I just, like, made it up, or it's actually in the Bible. But so anyway, he says, a day is 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is as a day. And most of the time, like, when I think of that verse, I'm thinking of the fact that, like, I'm applying it to, like, long periods of time, feeling like only a day to God.
Yeah.
But he says both. In other words, a day can feel like 1,000 years too, right? Yeah. I tend to, because in the context of the verse, it's like, you know, when is Jesus going to come back? And it's like, well, we don't know, because, like, what God's plan is, God's timing is unique to God, right? A day is 1,000 years, 1,000 years is a day. So that it's like, okay, well, we're going to wait many thousands of years then, you know, quote unquote.
Well, no,
you know,
and the 1,000 is almost arbitrary. It's really, a long time is like a short time because...
Yeah, it's just kind of, Exactly. But, you know, so anyway, for the purposes of this conversation, though, how long Loki is in that room being berated by Sif, you know, is it a day? But does the day feel like 1,000 years, right? There's actually, in the Swamp Thing comics by Alan Moore, there's this one point where Swamp Thing has to travel to hell to rescue his love interest, right? And he comes across his arch nemesis, Arcane, who is this evil dude, sorcerer guy. Okay. And he has recently died in the comics. And so when, like, just like the issue before, well, not the issue before, but he's recently died. And so when Swamp Thing shows up, he sees Arcane there, and Arcane is like, oh, how many hundreds of years have I been in this place being tormented kind of thing? And Swamp Thing's like, I think it was like 24 hours ago or something like that. And then the rest of that panel is just like Arcane screaming. It's very insidious. I mean, it's like, oof, that's bone chilling kind of thing, this idea. But it's also, that particular comic strip is playing, it's kind of making Kronos and Kairos together. Right, you have the sense that he's going
to
be there.
To use one more sort of analogy, is you think of, like, so for example, because I use the example, like, in Purgatory, of like, well, in one sense, how long does it take you to be purified of that desire for sin? In one sense, an instant, and another sense, 1,000 years. Right, to use that language, but you could even think in this life, in the Christian life, in one sense, going to the sacrament of confession only takes, it could be like 5 minutes, right? Doesn't even have to take that long.
Sure.
But for that person who maybe had been struggling to get up the courage to go, or to realize, you know, what they had been doing was sinful, or to have true repentance for that sin, to actually go to confession, that didn't just take the 5 minutes. That took, you know, could have taken years and years, right? People talk about how they were away from
the preparation,
from confession for, you know, it's like, think of, in one sense, the prodigal son was welcomed back into the father's arms in that instant, but the father had already welcomed him back in his heart when he saw him walking towards him. The second that son left, the father was already welcoming him back. And so in the same way, right?
Yeah.
It takes a long time in one perspective, but it also happens in a moment. And so that's kind of when we're talking about whether it's the, you know, Kairos, the fairy time, or the purification time, or Loki's, you know, redemption, or Loki's purification. Yeah, it was a long, like what we would call time. Oh, wow, that took 3 episodes or whatever. But it also happened in a moment. And that's kind of the big, you know, that goes back to our last, when we were talking about Kronos versus Kairos, is it's that these two things, like, we're living kind of in both worlds. And we can get too stuck in Kronos to not actually experience Kairos. And that's when life, you know, even a short life feels very long, right? That's when, I mean, one of the big things that you'll hear, like, when people talk about, especially, like, how teachers will interact with, you know, high school students, or even college students, where it's like, it feels like they've lived through so much already, that it's like their life has been, even though it's only been 16 or 20 years, it's like it's been a really long time. And I don't even just mean because of the events that have happened outside of them, but also how they've internalized, like how they've lived through all those events, like whether it's, you know, experiencing them on social media and all that, blah, 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 all that stuff. But it's like they've gone through, even though it's a relatively short period of Kronos, 16 to 20 years, it's like they've gone through a whole lot more. And
well, they have, they've lived their entire life, right? The fact is that their entire life is only 16 to 20 years, but that's their entire life. So there's actually, people have postulated over this phenomenon, this sense of time moving quicker the older you get.
Yeah,
it's pretty interesting. I'll lay it out real quick. Basically, the difference between a 20-year-old person and an 80-year-old person is that obviously they've lived much longer, right? But what happens to your experience of time is, for the 20-year-old person, 1 minute is, if you divide 20 years by however many minutes that equals out to be. I'm going to throw out random numbers.
Do easier math. Do 1 year versus 20 years is 1/20th. Is that what you're, like, the fraction? Okay, the ratio is just easier.
Yeah. So, sure. That's just better, right? Okay, cool. But anyway, those fractions are much smaller.
Yep.
In other words, we experience the units of time at a much, like, they're much quicker Like, in other words, they literally don't take up as much of our life. The longer you live, the less a minute actually constitutes how much. It's basically like inflation.
Yeah.
It's like time inflation. Like, the time gets, quote unquote, devalued if you have more of it. And it actually feels quicker because your experience of a minute is just that much more of a fraction compared to what it was when you were only 20 years old.
And something to add to that, besides just the sheer, like, even if you just look at it as straight up, like 1/20th versus 1/80th and how the fraction is small. But the other thing too is that when things are newer to you, they stand out more. And so it feels like you have more significant experience because you're experiencing more new things when you're only 20 or even only 30, because you're going through so many of those huge life milestones. But then by the time you're 80, you've already gone through those. And so, not that life necessarily has to become monotonous, but because you've experienced a lot of that stuff already, it doesn't register as a new thing. And so it can become like, almost in a sense, it is like the same old, like you've gone through all that. And so it doesn't register as like a, it doesn't stand out in the same way that things stand out when you're 16 or 20 or, so that's the other thing too, is because there's also the objective, right? Like you said, the objective 1/20th versus 1/80th, but there's also the subjective, how we experience it. And it's both of those. It's not either or. So yeah, that's.
Well, yeah, because reality is the combination of our experience with the objective reality around us, right? And so it's both. And what's interesting about the way this plays out is, in some sense, your transition into old age is a transition from fundamentally experiencing life chronologically to fundamentally experiencing life
chironically. I don't know if that's a word.
Chironically?
Don't say that.
Chironistically? Yeah.
Chirotic sounds too much like erotic.
Basically, so. But your experience of reality through the prism of time actually morphs. Because when, to your point, especially when your culture reinforces it, right? But really, every culture has always had milestones in early years, right? So it's not even necessarily unique to modernity. But modernity is specifically kind of hyper-focused on youth. And so in a lot of ways, all the milestones that anyone ever talks about are youth-based milestones. Mm-hmm. And it gives this kind of like lopsided perspective of like, where value
everything that
is.
Matters.
In other words, I was just having this, and not, everything that matters happens to you when you're young. I was just having this conversation with a coworker who just turned 25, and you know, she's obviously like feeling like, oh, I'm 25, I'm so old and things that. And we were having a laugh about it. Well, you know, everyone was there. I was there, right? Like, and she, you know, she's self-aware enough to like realize that, like, you know, yeah, blah, blah, blah. We were just kind of joking about it.
She's talking to a dinosaur when she says this.
Well, and there was a bunch of coworkers there, and she
I'll
was
get
the
there
youngest
eventually.
One there.
Eventually, I'll get to where, someday I'll be where you are.
But are you just going to pretend like you're 17 the entire show or something?
No, but I'm just like, always going to pretend that I'm so much younger than you, which...
I know, well, that's the idea.
The thing is that as we both get older, that gap is going to seem less and less significant, so...
It's true. Well, no, because the chronology just becomes irrelevant at a certain stage, at a certain point, right? But because it's just pure kairos eventually. I mean, technically the chronology at a practical level exists because you still have to like, you know, go to work on Monday at 8 a.m.
By the way,
like
that's our soundbite for the t-shirt is it's pure kairos eventually. So that's good for the, put that on the head.
That's good, right? Yeah, nice. But like, you know, so my coworker, it's like, oh, I got my driver's license. I graduated high school. I started college. I graduated college. And it's like, what? Now I can rent cars? Like, I'm 25 now. So now I can like rent vehicles. It's like there's this like sense of like diminishing returns the older she gets. And then, and at 25, because her insurance already dropped at like, what, 24? Is that when that happens? Like, your insurance rates go down?
I thought it was 25.
How exciting. Actually, it's so, like, which, or maybe it is 25, right? That's what you get to look forward to, kids. Eventually, you're going to get super excited when your insurance premiums go down. And so, but when you have this kind of like chronology of events that you're just kind of aiming for, and then you like finally get them kind of thing, A, diminishing returns, and B, you kind of run out of those, right? There's still like the big life things like getting married and having kids and things like that.
Some of us did that before 25.
Those are kind of like, I know, right? The smart ones. Trust me.
That's because we're living in Kairos. We're living in Kairos all the time.
Yeah, right. Well, anyway, so it's just eventually you don't have any milestones left to hit, quote unquote.
According to that mentality, culturally,
this kind of mentality, right? And you're just swimming in a sea of time at that point, right? Like you get older, things change or whatever, but your entire engagement with reality is no longer a matter of like waiting for the next milestone to drop, and you're no longer linearly viewing things like that. Unless you're talking about retirement,
that's when, you know,
right?
To go but back like, to your example, that's when existence becomes the hill of Sysyphus. That's when like life just becomes a chore.
Oh, and this either breaks or makes people right. This is why you have midlife crisis, right? Eventually, people in their 30s like realize that there's nothing left to like quote unquote live for because they've had this chronological mindset kind of thing, and it's just like I have at least as much life in front of me as I've had behind me. Only all the good stuff happened previously, and now the rest of my life is just like mundane. And so then they go out.
Remember when I said we were going to talk about Loki?
Then they have an affair and get a Mercedes. Yeah,
so
I know.
So this was
right?
Loki's midlife.
We're gonna have to. This is gonna be a two-parter.
No, it's not.
We haven't even talked about providence. We haven't even talked about fate. We haven't even talked about the basic theme of the Loki show, which is to like find agency
will over fate.
And you know,
no,
all
that
stuff.
I mean, that's classic Greek mythology.
Exactly.
We've been talking about that all the time. But I do want to at least bring up this one thing from the ending.
All right.
No, I won't steamroll you. We can always go back to it. But do you remember in the season finale? So He Who Remains, he's not the present on the screen when this happens. It's Miss Minutes, who we find out is sort of a I don't know, a cog in his machine, or sort of like an agent of
yeah, kinda. She's actually an interesting character in the sense that she's like a kind of liminal character. Uh-huh. There's even a point in the show where how is it phrased? They're like, what are you? Are you, do you know what's happening, or are you controlling
like,
what's happening? And she's like
a projection of
both. I don't know.
Is she an agent? Like
Does she have agency? I forget. There's this really interesting moment towards the end of the show where they basically like what they inquire into like what her existence is. And she gives a response that's like really, really ambiguous. I just don't remember the details. I'm going
to
look
it up.
And
not to like accuse, you know, the writers of like being lazy necessarily, but it's just sort of a convenient way of being like, just don't worry about it right now, which is fine. Actually the example that...
Well, as an Eastern Orthodox Christian, I get that all the time.
It's the apophatic.
where it's like, I'm giving a profound answer that says that this is too mysterious to understand, but it always just comes across as you don't have a good answer. So you're just going to say,
regardless of that right now, because the way that, or how, why I'm bringing her up in this example is whether that's true or not, whether she's, you know, her own like person, or she's just sort of a tool of He Who Remains, either way, she shows up at the end of time and she tempts Loki to basically like get the timeline that he always
take
wanted.
Over.
Basically like, You could, and again, if we're thinking, even though by the end of season one, he's had this redemption arc, but it's different from the one he experienced in the MCU that we were all used to seeing him as. And so this would be a very tempting, prospect is you get to beat the Avengers. And then she says, you get to kill Thanos. You get to become the king of Asgard, which again, that's what this original Loki always wanted. Because he was, if you remember, he was under Thanos' thumb for the Avengers, right? And so...
Yeah, absolutely.
So you had these three things. Those would have been very tempting to this version of Loki. And it's basically... But he has to then almost like become part of the lie that any of this stuff matters. That's kind of what the temptation is you have to just accept that you're just one of these many things, but you get to have everything that you say that you want.
There is something, I'm actually super glad you brought up that example. we've talked about like a purgatorial notion, right? And the Catholic understanding of this is kind of common and familiar to people, especially people probably listening to this podcast. The Eastern Orthodox equivalent to this is something that's, it's actually kind of controversial. It's not dogma. There's people that come on different sides of it. I'm pretty much in the camp of it. It's called toll houses. The idea is that after you die, you go through a series of prosecutions, basically, where you are confronted with your sin. And you either reject the sin or you have like you have angels with you, and the angels, you know, basically point the grace of Christ out. And you basically have a series of confrontations with all the, you know, the ailments, all the sinfulnesses that you've participated in throughout your life. And you have a moment of either acceptance or rejection of them, so to speak. And so you either, and so it's positioned in this kind of like the demons come and prosecute you and the angels there are to defend you. It's almost like a courtroom type construct. But here's the thing. One interpretation of how the demons tempt you is it's not just accusatory. It's also promissory. In other words, like they will, when you experience this, this kind of purgative moment, it's not just being like, oh, you're a bad person. It could also be like, don't you
it's
miss
the temptation
this?
Of Christ in the wilderness.
Like, don't you, yeah, like, don't you want this back? Like, are you really willing to give this up? Are you really willing to, like, look at this lust? Look at this greed? Look at this, I mean, like, doesn't this belong
to
you?
It's kind of like the dragon.
Isn't this who you are?
The lizard on the shoulder of that guy in The Great Divorce, in C.S. Lewis's Great Divorce. It's whispering in your ear
absolutely.
Saying,
it's 100%.
Hey, but this is too scary. You don't want to go for this. Remember how good this was? It wasn't perfect. It wasn't great, but at least it was comfortable, or at least it was, you know, whatever. So
that's right. When we get, one day we'll do an episode on The Great Divorce, and it's very, in my mind, right, it's very toll housey. But it's also, famously, a lot of Catholics look at it and say it's very kind of purgatorial. In a very limited sense,
yeah. I mean, we can get into that when we...
In a limited sense, right?
It's purgatorial, not anyway, just in the, minutes, like, the place of... It's purgatorial in the sense of it's purifying, which any Catholic and Orthodox would say that it begins in this life anyway. So all of the stuff that, you know, C.S. Lewis was writing about, even when he uses images like another planet or the afterlife, is it's meant to have a very direct analog to this life, right? Everything in Narnia is supposed to be everything, just like Aslan says, you know, everything in Narnia has a, you know, has something in the quote unquote real world or has something in the other world. Everything in Kairos has something in Kronos, but sorry, keep going.
Well, and so... If Loki, as a TV show, has a really, really good depiction of purgatory in that scene with Sif, it's almost like the Miss Minutes temptation at the end of time is almost like a little throw to like toll housey concepts, because it's a kind of an example of what would happen when you're given these kind of final series of like revelations about who you are, because that's ultimately what it comes down to, is a series of revelations about who you are. And so when Miss Minutes shows up to tempt Loki saying, don't you want to kill the Avengers? Don't you want to take over the throne? Don't you want to do these things? Loki has this moment of like introspection where he's like, am I that person? Is that what I want?
It's not just,
Or do I want something different now? Because at this point he has a,
like you said, who am I?
Yeah. It's being, who am I? Am I still that Loki or am I a different Loki now? Right. And it's perfect. It's a perfect moment of like demonstrating the redemption arc kind of thing, demonstrating the purgation that's occurred and things like that. Because at this point he has a love interest, which weird. we're wrapping this episode up, but can I just
Jacob?
Can we go
can
an
do
entire
another,
episode about
we can
Loki?
Do another episode. That's fine. We can do another Loki episode. That's fine.
And Michelle,
it is really a worthwhile get,
talk
season,
into
so.
The. There's so much. Dude, we didn't talk about the end
all
of time.
All the other Lokis that
like,
he meets.
We throw it out. All the other Lokis. Alligator Loki is legit. There's always a cliche where it's like, oh, everyone loves Alligator Loki. But, you know, that's because he's awesome.
Well,
so, yes, Alligator Loki
as if it
is
wasn't
the best.
As if any of the MCU stuff wasn't obvious. It is right from the comics. So it's not like it's a... It wasn't just a tacked on, like, just to be cute or to sell plush toys or something. So
I would forgive him
if that was the case.
Like, yes, give me an alligator Loki. I'm down with it. You know, it's hilarious. Okay. Well, yeah, this is a good stopping point then. So, we'll get into the weird incest connotations of Loki's loving each other. I mean, next time, kids.
I think that's always overblown anyway. But like I said, we can maybe get into some of that stuff too if we can do a true Loki like episode, because this wasn't, I mean,
an actual Loki. This was very much a Loki episode, but it was more, again, it was more like Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
I think
unless Bill and
Ted touch upon some of the big themes of Loki season one that I wanted us to do. Maybe not all of them, like you said, because the fate and free will was a big one. We wanted to kind of bring it into the whole time relation or time discussion that we had already had previously. And we did get into some of the season finale stuff, which that was one of the big things too, because obviously that's going to lead us into not as much maybe as Quantumania might, but it'll lead us into a lot of the season two stuff, which, you know, this is going to kind of segue into when season two comes out. So yeah, we can,
you know, you're right. Honestly, we can always, we don't have to do, we don't, we can keep, we can bring the conversation back like in October, and anything that we didn't talk about this go around can always get folded into the conversation the next go around and things like that.
Well, and this won't come out until like the end of, like right before the start of October anyway. So
right, well, and that's what I'm just saying, when season two comes up, we can start to explore the themes again.
Well, because presumably, not only will Tom Hiddleston come back, but Sylvia will come back. When I say Tom Hiddleston, the playing Loki will come back. But so a lot of those same things will probably get revisited from season one anyway, whether it's maybe it's the love story a little bit more, or maybe it's the, you know, the TVA and what's going to happen with the TVA after season one, or the, could almost say like the remnants of it, I guess, or whatever. Obviously, how does Quantumania affect the whole?
Because there's big dramatic. One thing I'll, you know, this is just a little taste. There's a difference between multiple timelines and multiple universes. Uh-huh. Now, people tend to conflate those things, but they're not necessarily the same thing. In theory, a timeline has multiple universes within it, and they're actually slightly different. The DC universe did this too. The DC universe has two facets to it. It has its multiverse concept and it has its timeline concept, and they are not the same thing. Even though in everyday parlance, they tend to be treated as such.
Well,
yeah. So boom, I'll just drop that big egg. Oh. This wraps up.
So I'll try to pick up the pieces, but thanks again, Jacob, for joining me for this conversation that I know you'd been looking forward to, even though you always say you don't feel as prepared.
I love that show.
Yeah, it was good, and we'll keep revisiting some of these things, especially it. I'll never forget how the light just left your eyes when I said we have to move on, but I think it came back around. So, and thank you guys for coming to listen,
we're good.
And just want to encourage you to please like, subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star or leave some positive comments on iTunes, because it does, you know, help make this show a little bit more visible and show up, whether it's in algorithms, search bars, all that stuff. You know, we can gently sort of capitulate to the AI overlords, and, you know, we'll kind of play the game a little bit if that's okay. You know, put in some of those key words or phrases and leave those positive comments and reinforce Jacob's love of time and the variance, and, you know, keep letting him hit those milestones in this professional setting.
I have nothing left to live for.
Yeah, so keep helping him hit those. Help the middle-aged Jacob hit some of those chronological milestones so that he can keep bringing that joy to the podcast.
I am awash in a sea of
time.
Thanks for listening to Voyage Podcast. The Voyage Podcast is a production of Voyage Comics and Publishing, which seeks to create exceptional entertainment informed by Catholic values that inspire people to live a heroic life. Voyage Comics seeks to advance truth and beauty found in powerful stories. To learn more, visit voyagecomics.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.